Our topic today is the centrality of Israel, and we're looking at this because the Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh is going to bring this into focus. So to appreciate that, we're going to tell a fascinating story that maybe some of you are familiar with, an incredible story that will bring, hopefully, this idea of the centrality of Israel into sharp focus, and we'll use that to explain this Rambam and a few other very important aspects of Torah life. My wife, Nechama, her grandfather, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was a prominent rabbinic leader in the educational world in the 1940s, 50s. He was the right-hand man of Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovitz, who founded Torah Mesorah, and he went across the globe. He traveled extensively in the United States, establishing different schools. And because he had very frail health, he had to settle ultimately in Miami because the physicians thought that would be better for his health and warm climate. He died young. He died at the age of 59. And that's why my wife's name, Nechama. She was born shortly after he passed away. So because he was in Miami, and there was a very, very small Orthodox, certainly rabbinic presence in Miami at that time in the 50s. So anybody who was anybody, great rabbinic luminaries who came to Miami for a variety of reasons, whether it was fundraising or vacation, came to their house. So they had literally anybody, from, you know, European Rosh Yeshivas to Shlomo Karlbach to like tons and tons of very prestigious people. So my mother-in-law has a lot of interesting stories about this. And her mother, Nechama's grandmother, she'll live and be well, also has great stories about this. So over Pesach, one of the people that she was telling us about, because usually on Achron Shel Pesach is her birthday, so when we get together with the family, so she'll talk a little bit about, everybody will wish her happy birthday, and she'll talk a little bit about the old days. So she was describing different people who came to their house, you know, including Rav Soloveitchik, who came to their house, and my mother-in-law remembers when Rav Soloveitchik, she was a small girl, and her father, Zichrono Livracha, came to the school to tell everybody, you know, that tomorrow there's going to be a very important rabbi, he's coming to the school, when he walks into your room, you should stand up. So she remembers that the next day, he walked into the classroom, and they assumed that the next person was going to be very important, and somebody from the janitorial staff walked in, and all the students stood up. So one of the people who frequented their home was an old European Rosh Yeshiva who spoke a broken English. His name was Rav Avram Kalmanovitz. And Rebbetzin Pelkovitz, she should love me well, she describes exactly, she mimics his accent, his heavy, heavy European accent. He spoke like a mix of English and Yiddish, more Yiddish than English. He happened to be away from the yeshiva. He was not in Europe at the time that the war broke out. He was stuck in America, and he was very active in the Vad HaHatzalah, the group that was trying to raise funds to rescue Jews from Europe. So she remembers how he was always talking to her, and she spoke Yiddish and English. So half Yiddish, half English, he needed to get a telegram to Humphrey. Who's Humphrey? Hubert Humphrey, that was his like big political contact, who was, by the way, at that time, a very significant, very prominent political personality. So Rabbi Avram Kalmanovitz, you could argue, was single-handedly responsible for the saving of the Mir Yeshiva. Because you know that at the outbreak of the war, there was a great rabbinic luminary in Vilna. His name is Rav Chaim Ozer Grzensky. Rav Chaim Ozer sent out word that all the yeshivas should all come to Vilna. And some of us were here several years ago. Rabbi Dr. Schneer Lyman was here, and he spoke about this topic. So Schneer spoke about, he actually gave out, I kept it, a list of the yeshivas and how many boys there were from each yeshiva and where they came from, and how they all convened in Vilna. And Rabbi Chaim Ozer, who was at that time living, he died shortly thereafter, but not at the hands of the Nazis. He said to all the yeshiva bachrim that they should come, and then as things got worse and worse, before the Germans came, there was an effort to try to rescue some of these yeshiva boys, and through a very, very long story, almost the entire Mir Yeshiva and several other yeshiva boys received transit visas, and that's on page one of your packet. This is from Yad Vashem, a brief story of the rescue of the Mir Yeshiva boys through Japan, ultimately settling in Shanghai. So you have here on the left side, I put it in from Yad Vashem, this is an actual copy of the radiogram, I think they used to call that, a telegram. I can tell you, growing up, I never had telegrams. I never saw telegrams, but maybe some people in this room recall such things. There we go. So if you look on the next page, look on page two, you'll see a picture. On page two, you'll see a picture of... I'm sorry, I didn't make enough copies. Someone share with Shoshana here, please, and with David. You'll see a picture of, this is one of these transit visas given to a boy, a young man, his name is Leib Malin. Leib Malin, Reb Aryeh Leib Malin, was one of the great luminaries, one of the greatest Talmidim, and soon to be Rabbeim in the Mir Yeshiva. This is what he looked like as a Bacher. And the telegram back on page one says, Leib Malin, Wad Road, Shanghai. I can't read all the words. Much exertion necessary and your ceaseless pressure on Kalmanovitz for demands of Rabbi Levenstein, stop, etc. You read the whole thing. They're sending telegrams back and forth, different places, to Rabbi Avraham Kalmanovitz, who was at that time in America, who was raising funds, and they did get enough money, because remember, they had to pay for the visas from Vilna, from Lithuania, through Japan to China, but it wasn't just the Chinese. How'd they get there? Right? They had to take the Trans-Siberian Railroad. They had to get permission from the Soviets. So they had to pay the Soviets for the visas also, for transit visas, which was a big part of the challenge. Rabbi Avraham Kalmanovitz single-handedly raised $50,000, which in today's equivalent is $856,000. To rescue these Yeshiva Bachrim, not everybody made it, they only had several hundred. They went through Kobe, Japan before settling in Shanghai. On page two, you'll see on the bottom right, this is the picture of the Mir Yeshiva building in the Shanghai ghetto during and after the war. They couldn't get out because of the transportation problems. They couldn't get out until 1946. Many of them came to New York. The Mir Yeshiva was reestablished in Brooklyn as well as in Yerushalayim with Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in Yerushalayim, Mir HaKodesh. So, yeah.
Stan grew up from his family hearing stories of a very, very, very wealthy cousin who was a trader and had business dealings in Kobe, Japan.
Okay.
And in his house during World War II, all the Mir Yeshiva boys went through on their way to Shanghai.
Amazing.
And he has, somewhere in his family, Milton probably has the records of this rich relative, whoever he was, in Kobe, where all the near people stopped and wrote to him.
Oh, perfect. So let's pick that up for a second. So the boys get to Kobe, Japan, which is a little bit strange because Japan is over there and China is over here. So they go to Japan, as Mrs. Poland just said, and then becomes the following Shiloh, because they arrive in Japan in the summer of 1941, and they're anticipating a very important date, which we in America were going to observe on Wednesday, October 1st, 1941. What is Wednesday, October 1st, 1941? It's close to Rosh Chodesh. It's Yom Kippur, that's right. Okay, go to hebcal.com, you put in the dates, it's Yom Kippur. So this group of Mir Yeshiva boys sends a series of telegrams to Israel in late summer 1941. And they say, wait a second. We're here in Japan. In Japan, they tell us that Wednesday, October 1st, use that as an example, is Wednesday. But we're not sure if it's Wednesday. What do you mean you're not sure if it's Wednesday or not? Well, you know, there's a thing, this imaginary line that runs through the Pacific Ocean somewhere. It's called the
International Dateline.
That's right, the International Dateline. So the Yeshiva boys are saying, well, we don't even know where we are here. You know, we know they say that it's Wednesday, but we know that the International Dateline was kind of picked arbitrarily by a group of scholar scientists, but do we follow the International Dateline as Jews, as halachic Jews? We don't know. Is Yom Kippur, is it on Wednesday? Or maybe we crossed the dateline already somewhere. We've been traveling for who knows how long. Look how far we've gone. You know, we're a bunch of Yeshiva Bachrim from Mir, and now we're in Kobe, Japan. Maybe we crossed the dateline somewhere. We don't even know. Do we observe Yom Kippur on Wednesday? Or maybe we crossed the line and we observe Yom Kippur on Thursday, they're going to think that it's Wednesday, but we think that it's Thursday because we've already started the next day, potentially. What do you do? So this arrived in Israel, and it created a huge question and a huge controversy. At that time, the late Gaon, Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the chief rabbi at that time of... At that time, there was no state, of course. It was just pre-state Palestine. The chief rabbi of the land of Israel, Rav Herzog, gathered together a small... like a convention of rabbis to try to figure out what to do. But they also had sent a telegram to B'nai Brak, to the Chazon Ish, Rav Avram Yishai Karelis, the great late Gaon. So he had an answer, and they had an answer, and they had a whole controversy. And this was written up in a work by Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky. Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky is most well known for the Sefer Gesher HaChaim on Hilchas Avelos, but also for calendars, many other important things. He was one of the great rabbinic luminaries the first half of the 20th century. So Rav Tukachinsky describes how there was a tremendous consternation, because I could tell you, you know, Shabbos is no big deal. People can observe 2 days Shabbos, and some did. You can observe 2 days Rosh Hashanah, don't worry, we got that one already. But 2 days Yom Kippur? That's tough. So this was a great controversy, and the psak in the end was split. The majority of the Rabbanim ruled that Yom Kippur should be observed, and we'll talk about why in a minute, on Wednesday. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion that in Kobe, Japan, Yom Kippur should be observed on Thursday, and there were some Bachrim who followed that. And there were actually some, apparently, some individual Bachrim who fasted both days. Svegedo Raisa Luchum. Wow. So what does the controversy revolve around? How would you figure out the international dateline? So on the next page, page 3, Rav Tukachinsky tells you, he says, well, the international dateline, there has to be a line. The problem is that when you have a globe, when you have a circle, there is no middle. There is no beginning point and there is no end point. So you have to draw a line, which is exactly what we have today, right? We have Greenwich time, they drew a line, they started the international dateline, and that's it. If you're on one side, you're on one side. You have to start a line somewhere. So he says, well, there has to be a middle line where the day starts. So on the here we're in Simon Gimel, Umikevan Shekein, Mikevan Shemuchrach Lios Gam Kav Merkazi. There has to be a central line. Kav is a line. There has to be a central line. Ubilto, without that, Ein Mizrach Ve'ein ma'arav, ve'ein hatchala v'lo sof l'ma'agal hayomi. If you don't have a starting point, you don't have a beginning of the day and an end of the day. You have to have a start. The day has to start somewhere. Ve'ein makom kavua l'kav ha'tarich u'memela, ein kvius l'yamim. So where are you going to pick? Where are you going to start your day? And based on this, you are going to establish where is the international dateline? But it has to start from somewhere. So now go to the second paragraph. V'hayesh kol shum safek lamishu al makom hamerkazi ha-yisraeli. Does anyone have a doubt as to what is the central place for Jews? Halo pashut l'chol adeos. It is obvious for everyone. Shelo haya v'lo yihiel Yisrael shum merkaz acher bilti Eretz Israel. There is no other central place than Israel. That is the center of the world. And betocha, besocha Yerushalayim. Uv Yerushalayim, sham merkaz, Yerushalayim makom hamikdash, the place of the mikdash. Sham merkaz hayitzirah, that is the place of creation. Shemimenu nivra ha'olam, that the world was created from there. Kinu Eretz Yisrael v'Yerushalayim, and therefore Chazal, he quotes the Gemara in Yuma, they nicknamed Israel and Yerushalayim Gam B'Shem Emtza Ha'olam, the middle of the world. V'Gam B'Shem Tabur Ha'olam, the belly of the world. The Adam Arishona, the first man. Shahaya Rishona B'Yerushalayim Halo Gabi Didei Vada Hayolo Yerushalayim Merkaz. Adam was created in Yerushalayim, so for him, when he got up in the morning, this is the center of the world. And therefore he says, it's obvious, upashut, fourth to last line of the paragraph, shelo nishtana ha-merkaz min zman ha-yitzirah. The middle never changed since the time of creation. Once that was established, Israel is the middle of the world, so everything is going to be following that. And he says, therefore, when we're going to calculate the dateline, we're going to calculate from Israel. So without, we're going to oversimplify a tremendously complicated story by saying that according to Ralph Tukhachinsky and others, you're going to go 180 degrees from Israel, which is going to put you on the other side of Japan. And Japan, according to Rav Tukhachinsky, is still within the regular, I guess you would say, accepted, the secular date.
Yeah.
It would be an issue for Hawaii, but we're not dealing with Hawaii
it's
today.
Secular date.
But so according to this, it's 180 degrees from Israel, which means that Japan is on the... Right. So I guess if you're looking at Japan, if you're facing Japan, so then the east, it's going to be on the west side of the dateline. The west side of the dateline. Yes. However, the Chazon Ish does not agree with that, and it's based on the following source, page 4. Much of it is based on the Chazon Ish as a Kuntres, which I did not go through the whole thing. There's a comment of the Sefer HaKuzari, which is very interesting that this appears in halachic literature. The Kuzari is usually referred to as a philosophical work. So, he also says the same thing, except that he divides it into four quadrants, and he's working with a three-quarter, one-quarter on page 4. But look at the top line. Hare Shabbos, Shah Shabbos Chala Besin. Remember, this is being written
in China.
This is written many years ago. You're talking now, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, you're talking about the golden age of Muslim Spain, 800 years before. Shabbos Chala Besin, in China, Shmona Esrei Shos Acharei Chula Be Eretz Yisrael, after Israel, 18 hours later. Ki Eretz Yisrael, Hi Ke'emtza La'eretz HaNoshavis. Israel is the center. And based on that, you're going to make your calculation. So the Chazon Ish says it's not 180 degrees. You're going to break it into four quadrants. So four quadrants of 360 degrees leaves you with 90 degrees. So according to the Chazon Ish, the international dateline for Jews is 90 degrees east of Israel, which actually cuts right in the middle of Australia and China. And that puts Kobe, Japan on the east side, on the other side of the dateline.
Why does he break now, it into quadrants?
That's part of this complicated lundus. That's exactly the machlokas, as to whether or not it's 90 degrees or 180 degrees. Not for today. It's a very complicated story. Most of the math is beyond my level of understanding. It's a very complicated balamor in Rosh Hashanah that deals with this. So the Chazon Ish then, just parenthetically, is faced with the following quandary. He says, wait a second, could you imagine... You're on, here's a good one, Dongfeng Street in Changchun in China. I found this in, there's a Rabbi David Heber who from Baltimore who's an expert on the dateline. I think he wrote an article about this. That's where I found this. Dongfeng Street, which is exactly 90 degrees east.
In both sides.
So you could have one neighbor who's observing
one
Shabbos.
Foot.
You could have one foot on Shabbos on Thursday, another foot on Shabbos, another one foot on Shabbos on Sunday. It's crazy. So Chazon Ish said, no, that's not the pshat. Chazon Ish says the following. He says that when you have one landmass, it all follows the majority. So let's say when I was in Australia, for example, I was in Melbourne and Sydney. So Melbourne and Sydney are on the east side, the other side, quote unquote, the wrong side of the dateline according to the Chazon Ish, and they would be observing Shabbos on Sunday. However, the Chazon Ish says, no. You can't cut them landmass and have one foot, one side of Dongfeng Street in Shabbos and the other one on Sunday. It doesn't work like that. It all, the whole landmass follows one halacha.
What about the United States?
So one second.
So which one?
So it's going to follow the rove. So therefore,
the rove of the landmass.
So it's Nigrar, Basar. So therefore, in Australia, everywhere in Australia, even according to the Chazon Ish, on the mainland of Australia, Shabbos is on Shabbos. However, the Chiddush would be the following. If you flew, if you took off on Sunday in Australia, if you left the ground, the landmass, it would now instantly become for you Shabbos. So the Chazon Ish would tell you, do not fly from Australia to somewhere else.
Wouldn't it depend on which direction I go?
Yes, if you're going... not necessarily. Even if you're going west, the minute that you leave the landmass, until you cross the line, you're still Shabbos for you. It's difficult to say greater at 10,000 feet. So anyway, According to the Chazon Ish, if you're on the ground, you're fine. You're going to spend Shabbos when everybody else spends Shabbos. But if you leave, if you go boating on Shabbos off of the landmass on Sunday, then you're now on Shabbos. So this is the complicated backstory. Yeah.
If you're vacationing in Melbourne, and on Sunday you want to take a boat trip.
Correct. According to the Chazon Ish.
In the harbor.
All right. So in the harbor, it's a good question. But if you went out beyond that, if you flew, so then the Chazon Ish would say it becomes Shabbos for you. That's it. Anyway, the reason I bring all of this up, besides the fact that it's very fascinating, is that you see that from a halachic standpoint, the geographic placement of Israel is significant, not just from, you know, we talk about Israel playing a central role in our worldview or our spiritual orientation. It's not just that. It's also true on a technical and practical level, on a legal level. And that's the next section of Rabbi Chaim Tukhachinsky's essay, is that that's also true for the Molad, which is what we're getting to right now for the Rambam. The Molad, what do they say when they announce it in the shul? They say the Molad will be at such and such and such a time. Where?
In Yerushalayim.
Why in Yerushalayim? We're here in Chicago. We should check outside, see when the moon is the new moon here in Chicago. The answer is the world doesn't run based on Chicago. The world runs based on the center, the beginning. What's the first spot?
It's Yerushalayim.
So now we can appreciate a fascinating aspect of the Rambam's rules when it comes to Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the section that we're up to now, using the Rambam as our loose guide for this year's series of Shiurim. The Rambam tells us on page 5, Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh, Halacha Aleph, Chod Shehashana, the months of the year, Heim Chod Shehalavana, they are the months of the moon, Sheneamar, Olas Chodesh B'chodesho, V'neamar, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, Rosh Chodeshim, Kach Amru Chachamim, the sages referred to this, Herolo HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe B'mara HaNevua, Dumus Levana. Moshe Rabbeinu was not an expert astronomer, so God showed him, he pointed to, this is the image of the new moon, because the moon, as we'll see in a minute, it waxes and then it wanes and then it comes down to nothing. He showed him Dumus Levana, an image of a moon, Va'amalo Kazer Re'e V'Kadesh. This you should see and sanctify. V'Hashanim, and the years, Sha'anu Mechashvin, that we calculate, you should just know, Heim Shnei HaChama. We do follow the solar calendar, but that's just for the purposes of years. As it says, Shamor Eschodesh Ha'aviv. That's one of the differences between, although I'm certainly not knowledgeable, very knowledgeable about this, one of the differences between Islam and Judaism is that in Islam, they follow the lunar calendar exclusively, and therefore Ramadan, which just concluded recently, where are we now? What is this? July. Ramadan just finished now at the end of June. It can fluctuate, but for us, Pesach can never fluctuate. It always has to be in the spring. It has to be Chodesh Aviv, because we are both in the lunar calendar and in the secular, in the solar calendar. It's not that we ignore the solar calendar. We also have the solar calendar, and that's for Pesach. So the Rambam then tells you, you know, there are approximately 11 days that are, right, in hanging in abeyance here, because you have 11 days approximately between the solar calendar and the lunar calendar. So every couple of years, the Rambam says, what do you have to do? That's right, you have to add a month so that you're in line. Right, that's why you have Adar Sheni, to make sure that your Hebrew, your lunar calendar, I should say, is in line with your solar calendar. It's not, again, it's sometimes we forget, it's not that the Hebrew calendar is only the lunar calendar. It's that there's the lunar calendar and the solar calendar, and we have to keep them both in order. And the Rambam then tells you, in Halacha Gimel, Halavana Nisteris B'chol Chodesh V'Chodesh. The moon, it hides approximately every month. Right? What happens? Because of the way that the planets are arranged, it doesn't mean that the moon doesn't go into hiding. It's just concealed. It's obscured from view. And it's not seen. The moon is still there. Mm-hmm. Right?
Just hit it.
Kids might get nervous. Yeah. But tell them, don't be nervous. The moon is still there. It has not gone anywhere. It's just concealed. By the way, that we have to go to the Adler Planetarium to fully, we could take like a field trip, to fully understand Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh. So he says it's hidden. It's nisteris. It doesn't disappear. It just means that it's hidden. So he says, around 2 days, a little more, a little less. So he says, at night, you're going to keep an eye out to see when does it disappear. And when it disappears, that's when you're going to figure out that's going to be called the new moon. Now, this can happen, like the Rambam said, over the course of different nights. So it could either be that your moon will be disappearing after 29 days, and then the next day is going to be the first day of the new month, or your new moon is not going to show, it's not going to appear in this window. It'll be delayed, it'll wait one more day based on a variety of factors, and then you're going to have 30 days in your month, and then the next month is going to be the next day, the quote-unquote, what would have been the 31st, but it's impossible. You can never have 31 days in a month. Your 31st day, that's going to be the first day of the next month. The first month is what we call, the first kind is what we call a chodesh chaser. It's not lacking anything, it's just... And then the second month is a chodesh malay, or meubar. Okay, that's what the Rambam tells you, and that's what he tells you in Halacha Dalet, chaser, and meubar.
But that's why in I think it's Tevet, or that's why there's 2 days Rosh Chodesh versus 1 day Rosh Chodesh.
Right, because 2 days...
Certain years...
It fluctuates. Yes, now...
Tevet and Kislev.
What Iris pointing out is that this is a longer, complicated story, is that observing Rosh Chodesh was very complicated in the Beis HaMikdash because of the practice of receiving the testimony, which we'll get to in a little bit. But so, what we call Rosh Chodesh... Let's say Rosh Hashanah. We observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So that's a little different than 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. Right? 2 days of Rosh Chodesh is, 1 day is actually from the last month. The second day, growing up, this was very confusing. The first day of Rosh Chodesh, let's say Rosh Chodesh, what do I mean now, Tammuz. But we had 2 days, right? We had 2 days. So the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz was actually...
It was the last day of...
It was not Tammuz.
It was Sivan.
So don't be confused about that. We observe it, because in the old days, that could have been, at the times of the Gemara, the Gemara says at the beginning of Maseches Beitza, that could have been Rosh Chodesh. So they had a practice at certain periods of time to observe it as Rosh Chodesh, in case they called it Rosh Chodesh. But if they didn't, they said, no, tomorrow's the next Rosh Chodesh. So today we... But it's actually this different month. There's day 30 of 1 month, and then day 1 of the next month. Well, how did they establish all of these calculations? So the Rambam tells you, well, back in the day, based on the Mishnah, tells you in Rosh Hashanah, they had people who were looking out. They had witnesses who would look outside, and they would see, wow, you know, the moon is disappearing. It looks, the sliver looks exactly like this, exactly like that. And they would come to the Beis Din. They would come to the rabbinical court, and the rabbinical court was trained in the sciences. They were trained in the sciences of astronomy, and they would testify, and they would say, we saw the moon look like this. And they would have a special session where they would investigate. And they would say, well, how exactly did you see it? Where was it aligned vis-a-vis the stars and the sun? At what time of night? Remember, they didn't have watches. They didn't have clocks. So they would have to, or phones. They couldn't snap a picture of it on their iPhone and say, this was the moon. So they would describe it. And Rabbi Gamliel, one of the great Nisim, he had, growing up, remember, had these pull-down charts? They had little wood poles in the school, and then you would have maps on them, would pull them down. So Rabbi Gamliel had that. Right now they have smart boards, they did away with those things. But when I was in school, they had the maps. You pull them down, and if you pull it too hard, it slips back up. So that's what Rabbi Gamliel had in his office. He had maps with different pictures of the moon. He said, did it look like this, or did it look like that? They would check them out. They would try to figure it out and figure out when... Okay. So they would accept the testimony, and then the Bezim would say, okay, this is the Rosh Chodesh, and based on that, well, let's say this is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, now you can tell all your friends and relatives when Pesach is, when Yom Kippur is, etc., when Sukkot is, all the holidays. Everything is going to be fixed based on what the rabbis and the Bezim said. Now today, we follow a calendar. They did away with the Kiddush HaChodesh al-Pi HaRi'iyah, based on the seeing. And the question is, well, how does this calendar work? Is it just a mathematical equation of scientists figuring it out? Well, the Rambam says, no. Take a look on the next page, on page 6. First, the Rambam tells you a number in Halacha Vav, that the Beis Din uses the mathematical equations. They go to the school to figure out all the math. And then, Halacha 7, the Rambam tells you, mitzvah saseh mena Torah, it's a positive commandment, al beisdin, on the rabbinical court, sheyachashvu v'yedu im yira hayarech im lo yira, o lo yira. They're going to make their calculations to figure out when the new month is going to be, if it will be seen or not seen. And v'sheyidrishu esa'edim, they should investigate the witnesses, ad sheyikachu esachodesh, and then they should send it out to the people. As it says in the Pasuk, Asher tikru'u osam mikra'ei kodesh, v'shamarto esachuka azos lemo'ada. Says the Rambam in Halacha Ches, Ein mechashvin v'choshvin chadashim u'ma'abrim shanim. You do not calculate and establish months and make years mu'ubar. Mu'ubar comes from the word?
Mu'uberes.
Exactly, yeah. Pregnant. You don't give it an extra dose. Chodesh and male, chodesh mu'ubar, it's like pregnant, it's extra, so a year that's a ma'abrim shanim, years that are extra. Ela be'eretz Yisrael. Only in Israel. Shene'emar, as it says in the Pasuk, ki mitzion teitzisora udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. The word of God comes from Israel, from Yerushalayim. Now, the Rambam says, v'im haya adam gadol b'chachma v'nismach be'eretz Yisrael. Let's say you had a rabbi who was ordained in Israel. So that person could take that ordination with him outside of Israel if there's nobody as great as him in Israel. What the ordination of we're talking about here, what's this ordination? This is original smicha. That meant one person from the next person, for all the way back from Moshe at Sinai. Not my ordination. My ordination is signed by Rav Shechter and Rabbi Chalap and Rabbi Lamb. It's very nice, but it's not real smicha. It's imitation smicha. The real smicha meant that they would literally ordain you from the person who was ordained from Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is interesting. Why does the Rambam think that it has to be established based on the Beis Din, number one? But it's not just the Beis Din, it's the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam, I didn't put in the packet, in Perek Hey, says even further that this is a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that is dafka Sanhedrin shebe Eretz Yisrael, or a bezdin asmuchim be Eretz Yisrael shenasna lahem ha-Sanhedrin reshus. Why is that? I don't understand. Why does it have to be that it's exclusively the chief bezdin, the bezdin in Israel? Now, what Bezdin is the Rambam referring to here in Parakeh? In the Beis HaMikdash, there was an office. It was called the Lishkas HaGazis. And in the Lishkas HaGazis, they had, imagine, I guess it was like, anybody here, I don't know if you've ever been to the Senate or to the House, to the office buildings in Washington, in Rayburn, let's say, one of these buildings where they have Senate committee hearings. So you have a kind of like a row of seats where the senators on this committee are sitting, and sometimes they're in a line, sometimes they're in a semicircle, and then in front of them you have a gallery, so you have people sitting. So they had that exact same kind of office in the Lishkas HaGazis, in the Beis HaMikdash. You had a semicircle of 71 rabbis. That was the Beis HaGadol, the chief rabbinic court. And in front of them you had rows of students in the gallery, 71 members of the court. This is the highest court in the land of Israel. And they're going to adjudicate the most serious cases. Now, it's important to note that the role of the Beis Din in Jewish tradition is slightly different than it is here in the United States. Right? In the United States, there are three different distinct branches of government. There's the executive branch, but the executive branch is primarily an enforcement mechanism. Right? The executive branch doesn't make laws. They're primarily supposed to be executing. That's why it's called executive. They're supposed to execute the will of the people. They are an instrument for execution of laws that are given by whom? The legislative branch. The legislative branch is a representative branch, because we are in a representative democracy. So you have 435 representatives and 100 senators. So combined, the Congress is supposed to represent the will of the people. They write the laws. The executive branch executes the laws, and the judicial branch adjudicates questions and the legal verity of these laws. In the concept of the Sanhedrin, it's different. Because laws are not invented by people. Laws are given by the Ribbono Shel Olam. So they are given the laws, the legislation, and they are given the responsibility to adjudicate that. And then they will hire people, the shotrim, the enforcers, the executive branch. But my question is, well, wait a second. Why are they also tasked with calculating the new month? That's not really judicial, and it's not really even legislative. It's procedural.
But you can't have somebody in a different country coming up with a different...
Great. So one answer could be practical. As Larry says, well, you need one address, and if it's going to be one entity doing it, so it makes sense, it should be the rabbinical court. But that's a pragmatic answer, which is true. Is there some deeper, more profound spiritual answer that it's not just, well, we could have had a tradition, there's going to be one guy every year, you know, the one that's like a gabbai. We would have had the gabbai HaChodesh. That guy is going to be responsible. Wherever he lives, he's going to be responsible for that. Or no, there's something more fundamental about the fact that the Kiddush HaChodesh has to be done by the Beis Din HaGadol, and the Rambam tells us that it has to be done in Israel, or as an extension of Israel. You could be a Muslim of Israel and then leave Israel, but you're just taking the power, the authority, the influence, the strength of the land of Israel, you're taking it with you. So the Rambam himself amplifies this. Because when we started this year, way back when, we noted that the Rambam's work, this Yad HaZakah, the Mishneh Torah, is an amplification of his minyan mitzvos. Excuse me. His list of 630 commandments. This is just an expansion of that. So let's look back. What did the Rambam say in the list of mitzvot? So he gives it to you. On page 7, the Rambam has a lengthy description of this mitzvah, which he says is, in his calculation, the 153rd mitzvah. That God commanded us, Shetzivonu Yisbarach Lekadesh Chadashim, to sanctify months, Ulachashev Chadashim, and to calculate months and years. Vezui mitzvah skidish achodesh. And that's what God said to us. It is Hachodesh Hazel Lachem. Ubo apirush, fourth line. Eda zute mesur lachem, fifth line. Kolomar, shemitzvah zu eina mesur lakol ish veish. It's not given to every man, kamo Shabbos Bereishis, like Bereishis. Shekol ish yim neshesh yamim veishbos bishvi. Everybody, each one of us, we keep track. 6 days we work, 7 days we rest, seventh day we rest. Rather, it's not that everybody's going to go home and look at the moon. Ad she kishe tir'eh, kishe yisra'eh, l'kol ish v'ish ha'levano. Everybody will see the moon. Sheyikva hayom ha'u Rosh Chodesh. Everyone's going to decide it's Rosh Chodesh. No. Avo mitzvah zu, three lines later, lo yasa usa lo'olam zulas, based in ha'goro levad. Only the chief rabbinical court. Ube eretz Yisrael levad. And in Israel alone. V'lachein, the Rambam says, but la ha'ra'iya etzleinu. We don't have the vision. We don't look at the moon anymore. Hayom beheder beis nagadol. Because today there's no more beis nagadol. So you can't have looking at the moon and accepting testimony because you don't have a beis nagadol. Just like Moshe bot la hakrova sakrabanos. Just like there are no more sacrifices. There's no more kiddush hachodesh al pi ha'ra'iya. There's no more looking. Why beheder hamikdash without the beis hamikdash? And now, go to the 2 lines later, 3 lines up, 5 lines up, where the Rambam starts the paragraph, Vida, and now you should know. He goes further. She'acheshbon hazeh, this calculation, she'nimne oso hayom, that we counted today, v'nedarbo, where the Rambam is talking in the 1100s, v'nedarbo Rosh HaChodashim, we know the Rosh HaChodashim, v'hamoados, and the holidays, e'ef shela asoso eretz be'ela be'eretz Yisrael b'levad. You can only make that calculation in Israel. Wow. So what does that mean? That means, says the Rambam, turn the page. Three lines in, Ubakan Shorish Godel Ma'od, you should know something very important, Bishar She'amuna, from our faith. Lo Yadeo V'lo Yizboni B'mekomo, Elamisha died to Amuka. You have to have a deep You see where the little bracket is now? A deep knowledge. V'zeh sheheyoseinu hayom b'chutzlaritz. Today we're in exile. Monin b'melecha se'ibra shebiyadeinu. We have a calendar that's given to us. We count it in our times. V'omer, we say today is Rosh Chodesh and today is Yom Tov. Lo mipnei cheshboneinu nikbeheyu Yom Tov b'shum panim. We absolutely do not establish holidays today because if we decide, it says on the calendar in Chicago. Elo mipnei shebeistin ha'gadol shebe'eretz Yisrael. Kvar kavu zeh hayom Rosh Chodesh Yom Tov. Amazing. The Rambam says today we're going to establish, you know, Rosh Hashanah when it is, not because of today. It's because hundreds of years ago, the rabbis and the Beis Din HaGadol established that this is the calendar. And that's going to run until the Mashiach, until the Beis HaMikdash comes back. Don't be fooled. Don't think that when the Gabbai says the Molad will be, that's why it's Rosh Chodesh. It's not. Mm-hmm. In the Rambam's opinion, the only validity is because we are continuing the old tradition that was established and locked up. And now the Rambam says something even bigger. Go now to the next paragraph break. V'ani Yosef l'chabir, I'll tell you even more, the Rambam says. Ilu efshar derech mashal, if it could be, God forbid, shebnei Eretz Yisrael ye'adru me'Eretz Yisrael, that God forbid there would be Jews ceasing to live in the land of Israel. Chalila l'kel me'asozos, God forbid that this should ever happen, and it cannot happen. The Rambam says, "Ki uiftiach." God promised, "Shelo yimache oso sauma mikol v'kol, v'lo yesham bezin v'lo yebuchutz laretz bezin shenismach be'eretz Yisrael." If it would be possible that there would be only Jews living in chutz laretz and no Jews in Israel, hinei cheshboneinu ze lo yo'ilenu az klum b'shum panim. Guess what? The calendar would disappear. There would be no more holidays. Amazing. So the Rambam is doubling down. He's clarifying for us that you should understand that it's Dafka the Beis Din HaGadol, that it's Dafka and Eretz Yisrael, and what we do today, the Rambam, we are in the same boat with him. We're 900 years later, but we're in the same boat. He says whatever we do today is because of those days, and the question is why. So the Ramban Nachmanides on the side here, he takes significant issue with this Rambam on the fact that the Rambam thinks that it's predicated on the Beis Din HaGadol. And for this, in the back of this Sefer, Rav Shechter's Sefer, called Mipnini HaRav, he quotes an answer for Rav Soloveitchik, which we're not going to talk about today. But I did not find in the Sefer, I heard from Rav Shechter, quoted from Rav Soloveitchik, an amazing explanation for this Rambam. Why the Rambam thinks it's Dafka the Beis Din HaGadol, and why the Rambam thinks that it is in Israel only, in the centrality of Israel. Because we said before that today, in our government, in the United States, the secular government, so we have three branches. You have the legislative, you have the executive, you have the judicial. But we mentioned that within the legislative branch, you have a very specific quality. And that is the quality of representative government. So Rav Soloveitchik had a chiddush. He said that the Beis Din HaGadol is not just a group of arbiters or of lawmakers, they're also representatives. They are what he called the Nitzigei Klal Yisrael, the representatives of the Jewish people. Meaning, how do you know what the collective will of the people is? So the answer is you have representatives. Today those representatives are the Congress in America. In the times in Israel, the Beis Din HaGadol, they represented the Jewish people. And therefore, when it came to a question of the calendar, that's a policy matter. It's a policy question. Who does the policy go to? The community. Whether or not they made a new year, the Gemara says at the beginning of Sanhedrin, a lot of it had to do with the weather. Because people were going to be traveling. They're going to come for Pesach to Israel. Depending on how the weather was, I kid you not, this is the truth. The Gemara says, depends on the weather. Is it going to be difficult for people to get there, or is it going to be easier to get there? Well, if you need another month, either because the economy is not right, the sheep are not old enough, the month is off, so the Bezin would sit around and figure out, well, what are the needs of the people? If we don't have enough, you know, if the roads are muddy, we had a very wet winter, and all the people are going to walk to Yerushalayim, and they're all going to get sloppy with mud, and people are going to have a hard time, you know what we should do? Let's push off Pesach a couple weeks. let the roads dry out. Let's give people a chance to get there. Who makes that decision? You don't need legal scholars to make that decision. It's not a legal decision. It's a legal ramification, but it's a policy question. So Rav Shaftu said, from Soloveitchik, well, if it affects all of the Jewish people, let's get the people who represent the Jewish people. And that's the Sanhedrin. And that's what... What's that?
Who appointed the Sanhedrin?
It's a great question. It sounds like, I don't have a good answer for that, it sounds like it started with Moshe Rabbeinu and the Shivim Zakenim, and then the Gemara says that it was kind of like a meritocracy. They would have the boys sit in rows, and whoever was the most accomplished scholar would sit at the, like at the, imagine like the front row on the right side. And then when someone would retire, this person would take his place. And then they would move.
It's like volleyball, you rotate.
Exactly.
Retire,
the Gemara says that a dayan who was too old, they were afraid that the person would become callous and insensitive. That they might not have the compassion that's necessary, which is interesting. So there was a retirement age. I forget exactly. I think it was 70, but I'm not sure.
You think it would almost be the other way around. And as you get older, you have more experience, it would be more...
Yes, but the concern is that at a certain age, that the person might... Yeah, they might not have the sensitivity to... and it's out of a sense of... vigor and compassion, which is interesting. Like, there's a balance there.
You don't like
so for any other reason,
right.
You retire.
What's that?
Like 40,
of course somebody could retire.
No, but for like whatever reason, yeah, I think if there's a guy that said, hey, you retire.
Yes.
And he's a huge Talmid Chacham, people would say, you know what, you guys are smart, but this guy just retired is smarter than you guys.
Oh, right.
Are.
So the Gemara says, Rashi quotes this, that Ein lecha ela shofet shebi'amecha. You have to look at the people you have in front of you in that door. So if your generation, the greatest rabbi is such and such, so that's what you got. Look, today we have wonderful rabbis, but we don't have the rabbinic leadership that we had 50 years ago. And certainly not 100 years ago, 150 years. That's, you know, you take what you can get. So this is what you have. So let's come back. Let's come back. It's true. That's what Rashi says. Yiftach bedoro kishmul bedoro. Yesterday's Haftorah was about Yiftach. Yiftach was a leader, and that you had to observe what he said. He was the leader. He was the general. He was the chief, even though Yiftach was not the brightest bulb on the tree, you'll excuse me. Yesterday, in the end of the Haftorah, what does he do? He makes a neder that whoever comes out of his house, he's going to send up as an ola, and who comes out first?
His daughter.
His daughter. So it's a terrible... And the Gemara says, Yiftach was not... He was not so... I mean, I shouldn't speak badly about Yiftach, you'll excuse me, I apologize. But the Gemara has very sharp things to say about him. So the Gemara, Rashi quotes, Yiftach Bedoro, if you're in the generation of Yiftach, you got to listen to him like the people in the generation of Shmuel. Shmuel Bedoro, Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. But getting back here, so what we're saying is, and Rav Shechter pointed out, we don't have time today, is that there are other cases, if you look in the Mishnah, the beginning of Sanhedrin, where rabbinical court will follow something, will rule something, you don't need... It's not really an adjudication. You need representation. It's a policy matter. It's a procedural matter. So now I can understand why the Beis Nagel, because they're the ultimate representatives of the Jewish people. Well, why then does it have to be in Israel? The answer is because if the center of the Jewish world is the land of Israel, then it's actually the people who live in the land of Israel who represent the entirety. They are the entirety of the Jewish people. So the Rambam said, if there were no Jews living in the land of Israel, what would happen? There would be no Jewish community. There would be no representatives, and therefore there would be no calendar. Correct! Yes! The Rambam is calling it like he sees. The Rambam did not live in Israel. He passed through Israel on his way to Egypt. So what we're saying now is that, and let us be clear, we cannot apologize for this. Jews outside of the land of Israel, for this purpose, are irrelevant. We do not count. Only the Jews in Israel constitute the congregation of Israel for the purpose of establishing national policy. National policy, in this case, meaning the calendar. Yeah?
Isn't that superseded by the fact that now... calendar is firm. We don't have to depend on the people.
Yeah, so
everything is firm now.
Right. So the Rambam will say, don't worry. That's because at that time you had the calendar that was fixed by the rabbis in the land of Israel. But let's say they didn't have a set calendar yet. Let's say before they didn't have a set calendar and they needed the rabbis to establish a new month based on calling it like they see it. And there was no rabbinical court in Israel. And there were millions of Jews living outside of Israel. You know what the Rambam would say? No more Rosh Hashanah. No more Yom Kippur. Why? Because only the Jews of Israel constitute the community of Israel, because that's the center. And now go to the last page, page 9. This is really an explicit Gemara Maseches Horios about a rule, Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur. There was a time when the Beis HaMikdash stood that they had to bring a special korban. We do not believe in rabbinic infallibility. Rabbis make mistakes just like everybody makes mistakes. And not only that, great rabbis make mistakes. The greatest of the great make mistakes. So there is an entire tractate devoted to what happens when the Beis Din HaGadol, the chief rabbinical court, makes a mistake. And they make a mistake that is so severe that it involves the most severe violations, like an Isser Kares, God forbid. They tell you that you're allowed to drive on Shabbos, and then everybody starts driving on Shabbos, and then 2 days later they reconvene, they say, oh my gosh, we made a huge error, and we caused millions of people to be Mechalel Shabbos. They can make that kind of mistake, it happens. People make mistakes, even great rabbis make mistakes. So the Gemara says, well, you have to bring one korban. Now, you're not going to everybody individually bring their own sacrifice. One korban, the Beis Din, they're responsible to take the responsibility for it. They take ownership. They have to bring one sacrifice. It's called Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur, or Par Hagbal Kol HaMitzvos. It's one cow with special rules of it. Well, let's say they made this ruling and only five people listened to them. Other people didn't listen to them. They said, oh, they're probably making a mistake. They'll change their mind in a week. Nobody else drove on Shabbos. So then they don't bring it. They only bring it if most people followed the rule. They made a rule, it was wrong. If most people followed it, well, most of whom? That's it. So the Gemara says here on the bottom line, on the underline, in Gemara and Horia Staf Gimel, Amar Avasi, Ubahora, when it comes to the ruling, Halech Acharov Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael. If you're going to figure out who followed the ruling, you only count the Jews in Israel. That means if you have 30 Jews living in Israel and 30 million Jews living in Chutz Laretz, it doesn't matter. You follow the 16 Jews living in Israel. Yeah, Ira?
So with that in mind, I'm sure you get shailas like this all the time. Somebody going to Eretz Israel for the Yom Tovim, and they're observing the 2 days of Yontif. You're following the majority. Why can't they keep 1 day versus the 2 days?
So Ira is raising a good question, which is about the question of observing 1 day or 2 days. So this was debated already in the times of the 400 years ago, in the time of the Chacham Tzvi and the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo. So it's a complicated question. Some of it has to do with the difference when you have a clash of minhagim. You know, that's part of it. Where I personally, let's say I daven Nusach Sfard, and Or Torah daven Nusach Ashkenaz. Right. So how do you navigate that? That's one part of the question. So let's say my practice is to observe 2 days, and then I go to Israel. The second question is, well, what's the origins? What's the root? We should have a whole separate discussion about this, of the requirement to observe 2 days versus 1 day. Is that a discussion about the place? Or what's that?
The calendar.
Right, is it about the calendar? Well, we know the calendar. The calendar is fixed. Is it about an establishment? Is it about whether you're a person who is of Eretz Yisrael or is in Eretz Yisrael? So it's a good question. But what I wanted to bring out from today, which will be for another time, is to see from this Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, which is supported, you can see it buttressed by this Gemara in Horios, that the concept of the centrality of Israel is not just a theoretical machshava one, it's really a legal one. And that when we look at defining the Jewish community, we living in Chutz Laretz, in a certain sense, we are second-class citizens. We don't really count. And so, you know, of course, we're going to fulfill our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we think about, you know, the people who have sacrificed so much. You know, we all know people, some of them even our own families, who made this sacrifice to go to the land of Israel, to go on Aliyah, and some of them under the most difficult circumstances over many generations. This is part of the kind of the telos of the Jewish people. And we're seeing the ingathering of exiles in our own day. And that's, you know, you talk to people who are there, that's the vision of the Ribono Shel Olam's world, which is that all the Jews should come back to Israel, and then we'll be at home in our state. And we have to remind ourselves, I don't want everybody to walk up and say, oh, you know, our life is really b'dievet. It's really like pretty, we're pretty much the losers. Well, yes, we are. We should know that. It shouldn't take away from our experience as Jews, but it should set our sights on thinking about what is the ideal Jewish society. The ideal Jewish society is living in Israel, according to the tribes, and that's going to have practical ramifications, even in our own day. So it's true for defining when is the international dateline, that you need to look at Israel as the center. It's true for establishing the Molad or Rosh Chodesh when we announce it in Shul. And the Rambam, according to the Rambam's opinion, that's true for establishing all of the calendar. And like you said, the calendar today, it's fixed, but it's fixed because it was fixed by people in Israel hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And had that not been the case, the Rambam said, we would have been in danger. He said, it's not possible. We can never, there's never been a time. But the idea that we are, and maybe the positive way to look at it, is that we are living on the coattails of the Jews of Israel, of hundreds of years ago. And we are still living on those coattails, and hopefully we can come back, God should bring us back, that's what we say every day.
Amen.
Right. That's right. Soon we're all going to be back there. That's